The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
With me right now is Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote the book Eat, Pray, Love. It was made into a movie with Julia Roberts. She has a new book out called City of Girls. Can you tell us about your new book?
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. And secondly, the new book is a novel. It's about New York City showgirls in the 1940s theater world. I like to describe it as my hope with the book is that it would go down like a tray of champagne cocktails.
Okay.
I know we are living in a dark, dark moment. I just thought I think we could all use something very light and fizzy and joyful. And it's mostly largely about female desire, female sexual desire, which was pretty fun for me to write about.
And it's Vivian Morris as the is the protagonist the right word for it?
Yeah. You got it. You do it.
I got the words.
That's it. That's exactly it.
Okay. So what's her story?
So her story is that at the age of 19, she gets kicked out of college and her parents send her to New York City to live with her aunt who runs a kind of burlesque theater company in Midtown. And she comes from a very nice, respectable, conservative family, but she's got a wild side and she falls in with a bunch of girls who are very wild and just goes and tests her beauty out against the men of Midtown, mid-century New York City.
And then eventually this lady, she lives on through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and she's very old. And there's sort of a memoir element to this.
Yeah, the book is written actually in the form of a letter. So it's sort of a fake letter that I wrote. She receives a letter in the mail. She's almost 90. And it's from somebody saying, now that my mother has died, I wonder if you might tell me what you were to my father. And so the entire book is her recounting what she was to this person, and we don't know, the reader doesn't know until quite near the end who it was, but she runs through her entire sexual and romantic history in order to explain.
Sounds hot.
It is. I have to say, I enjoyed writing it. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah,
I think you'll enjoy reading it.
How much of you was in this book?
A lot, actually a lot. I've wanted for years to write a novel about promiscuous girls who do not have their lives ruined by their sexual misadventures and by their romantic mistakes. You know, there's this like trope of the story of the ruined woman. And, you know, I just wanted to write something kind of against that, pushing against that in a way.
Boys have been getting away with it for generations.
Yeah,
so.
No kidding. Yeah. I mean, that's part of what happens in this book, too, is the old double standard. But guess what? Girls have been getting away with it for generations, too, because as I like to say, if women could not survive the really stupid sexual and romantic mistakes that they make, there'd be scarcely a woman living left in the world, you know. And so I wanted to write about, you know, the choices that we make when we don't understand what consequences are yet and what that seasons us into as we get older.
Can you tell me, I read that you grew up in a house without a TV. On a Christmas tree farm?
That's right, yeah.
What would be some of your early memories from that?
Well, my parents just had this very profound idea that they just wanted to raise us on their own terms, and so they were friends.
In a hippie sense, or more in a just traditional?
No, more in a libertarian sense. I always say my parents are the only people in America who made their own goat's milk yogurt and also voted for Reagan twice. So they were like,
"Well, that's a pretty narrow."
It's a pretty narrow Venn diagram, right? and so yeah, it was a weird bunch of contradictions going on there, but mostly it was about self sufficiency, and yeah, we didn't have any media in the house. And the library was fortunately like a pretty substantial bicycle ride away, but we could get there. So my sister and I grew up reading and writing, and she became a writer, and so did I.
How old were you when you started to write?
God, as soon as I could, you know. And my older sister, who Catherine Gilbert Murdoch, who's a young adult novelist, she's 3 years older than me. She was creating books by the time she was six or seven, and I got in it too. And we would actually bind books and draw our author photo on the back and like write fake New York Times reviews. We were completely self-publishing at the time of like grammar school.
Oh, well
already.
Ahead of your time on that one, yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing. And then you were one of the youngest people to get a short story published first time. I think Norman Mailer was the one before you in Esquire magazine. How did that come about? How did you get your break?
Isn't that remarkable? It was easy. I just had to endure 7 years of rejection letters. So that was nothing to it. Yeah, I did. I mean, I have a file of 7 years of rejection letters. I just kept sending stuff out and sending it out and sending it out and getting it rejected and sending it out. And that's how it's done, really. And I do remember this one moment in my early 20s where I got a rejection letter from Harper's Magazine. And I remember standing at my mailbox and reading it. And I started laughing. And the laughter was, this was my exact thought. It is so adorable that you people think I'm going to stop doing this just because you don't like it.
Yeah.
I am so not done with this. This is the only thing I want to do with my life. And so that's why I persisted. And eventually I got very, very lucky.
Did you find it easy once you broke through, or was it always hard graft and then with big leaps forward and big setbacks?
I don't think easy or hard have ever really figured in my relationship with writing.
You're just going to do what you do?
I just love it. Mm-hmm. I loved it while I was writing and getting rejected. I loved it while I was a struggling journalist and an upcoming writer. I loved it when I was hugely successful with Eat, Pray, Love. I loved it after. Like, it's really my vocation. So, and it's not that it's easy. It's just that I can't imagine doing anything else with my time.
Okay. Can I ask you then about a different thing that I saw you wrote about? Like, I've heard of sex addicts, but you've described yourself before as a seduction addict.
Yeah.
Is that a letter that you said that there's been dozens of intimate entanglements, not casual, it was a heist. Does it affect a woman when your era of maybe being in your primary seductive phase in life changes and you're into, like, some other part of your life, or is it still going as strong as ever?
No, it's not. Thank God. No, it's not. No, it's something that I was doing really kind of compulsively in my 20s. And I think there was a lot of need behind it, you know, a lot of longing. I think I don't want to totally pathologize it either. I think there was also a lot of curiosity, mm-hmm. A lot of a sense of adventure. And I think it just took me many years to figure out how to modulate that, you know, and not just throw myself at everything that was exciting.
And how do you then kind of manage relationships given your massive fascination with some variety in terms of, you know, the people that you've encountered? I know you have two previous husbands. You have a girlfriend who died a year and a half. I was saying that to you during the break. That's a really awful thing. But you've kind of done a full spectrum in that respect. How do you?
Yeah.
Do you know where you're going in, on that front, or is it?
I'm sorry that I'm laughing. I'm just laughing at your use of the word manage. I'm not sure I could be argued that I have been managing anything. Have you ever been to an arena concert and they have a t-shirt cannon and they shoot t-shirts out into the audience?
Mm-hmm.
That's what my heart is like. And it just is like that. I just don't have, I don't think you can manage the t-shirt cannon.
That sounds like a roller coaster.
It is a roller coaster, actually, yeah. And it's sometimes it's a kind of a whiplash-inducing roller coaster. Other times I would say that I feel sorry for anybody who doesn't live this way. You know, I've had such beautiful, beautiful love stories and known and loved such beautiful people. But no, stability, constancy, these don't seem to be words that you would associate with me.
Okay.
Not in that regard. I've got my writing. I'm solid on that. And also, there's a line in the novel where Vivian, my protagonist, to quote you back your word, where she says at some point in a woman's life, she just gets ashamed of, she just gets tired of being ashamed all the time, and then she can be who she truly is. And some of my seasoning and maturing has just been about kind of accepting what I'm like and trying to do the least amount of harm to anybody with it. But I can't, you know, my heart seems to have a will of its own very much.
Is Vivian Morris part of you then? Or is this a...
Only like 95%.
When you say do no harm, it looks like the libertarian gene passed right down, because that's...
that is it, isn't it?
The founding thesis, just do no harm.
I know, and it's tricky. You know, when people, it's risky. Love is risky. When people get involved with each other, they hurt, you know.
And it's not a case you don't walk out of it scot-free, obviously. You've been kicked in the guts a few times.
Sure, yeah, but I seem to be, I don't know, you know... I don't know if you had Stretch Armstrong dolls here in Ireland, but we had them when we were growing up. And it was like this rubber doll that you could pull.
Bring out like 3 feet long and
and
just
go back to... Yeah, and it snaps back. I feel like that's kind of also what my... It's a t-shirt cannon that snaps back into position.
I have to say your analogies are definitely some of the...
Thank you.
Some of the more unusual ones.
Thank you. I want to create a word picture for everybody here. And it is what it is. You know, there's a certain amount of ourselves that we can manage, and there's a certain amount of ourselves that is just our nature.
How do you stay creative? I mean, is this book number 10?
Nine, actually, yeah.
Nine.
But
oh, wait.
Good enough
at
this point.
Close enough for government work. So book number 9.
Yeah.
Your books are successful. Julia Roberts played you. You know, these are all big achievements.
Mm.
But I'd like to go back to the death of your girlfriend. And then how do you remain creative through that? I know some people turn to creativity almost as a salvo. Others, it just cuts off the connection between their creative... spark and their ability to perform. How did it affect you?
I was astonished to find that a few weeks after she died, I was back at work. And I think that I needed it deeply.
Is back at work like a room in your house where you go
and
type?
Yeah. And I think I needed to restore myself. And I think creativity can be a way that you restore yourself. I actually have a sort of cosmic mystical idea of it, which is that one thing I seem to understand about the universe is that it's in a state of constant creative response. It seems to be all it wants to do. If the universe can be said to want something, it's it wants to keep creating, expanding, creating, expanding. So I think when we create on the small level, on the small C level of creation, whatever it is, doesn't have to be writing a book, cooking something, making something with your hands, gardening, anything, where you take nothing and make it into something, you're getting in the slipstream of like the what the universe is driven by, and then it heals you because you're in the right direction, you know. And when you don't, when you become just a consumer, which I think is the opposite of a creator, and we live in a culture that's constantly telling you that it's enough to just be that, but it isn't, then you get sick. You get sick and unwell and depressed. And so I think creativity is a medicine for me in a real, real way.
And you have a way to just tap into that source? Is it you hit a certain flow with your life and then everything starts going, or is it kind of explosion recovery?
It's more like I really, at this point in my life, trust. It's a tremendous faith for me. I trust that when I'm interested in something, that it's to be followed and that there's a reason for it. And I don't second guess it. And I just, even if it's the tiniest little clue, I think of creativity as a I think everybody thinks that it's some biblical Old Testament lightning strike God standing there saying, you know, this is what you must do next. It's not that big and vivid. It's more like a scavenger hunt. And it's like tiny, tiny, tiny. So your eyes kind of have to be on the ground looking for the breadcrumbs. And then
do you believe in God?
I do. But anybody out there who doesn't believe in God, I would just say, I don't also don't believe in the God that you don't believe in. So we're good. You know, I know what you mean and I understand. But yes, I actually, as a matter of fact, I do. But it's an evolving understanding.
But so it's not what carries you through the dark moments or anything like that?
What carries me through the really, really dark moments is love. And I don't mean seductive or romantic love. I mean some deep abiding belief I have that we are loved, that we are loved, that whatever created us wanted us to be here, and that even when we're alone and even when we hate ourselves, we're loved. And my primary, my most important and life-saving relationship is my relationship to that love and that idea, which I will literally write to, ask questions of, the call upon, pray to, you know, and I guess you could call that God, but I it makes a lot more sense for me to just call it love.
I'm actually meant to be talking about the book, too. So
that's okay. I don't care. I'd much rather talk about this, honestly.
I'll just
this is the only conversation I ever want to be having. Yeah. So,
if I was to just then to finish by asking you, how long will you be here? Where's your book for sale? Where do people find out
more?
Oh, it's
for sale anywhere that fine books are sold.
Are you doing book shows or signings?
I'm here for the Dublin Literary Festival, so I'll be doing an event tomorrow, which I believe is sold out. People can always find me on social media, and my books are everywhere. So, you know, come along if you want. That would be my advice. And if not, have a good day.
Okay. All right. Look, that was Elizabeth Gilbert, author of City Girls. She also wrote Eat, Pray, Love, and fascinating stuff all around.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.